what your country can do for you.
You shall not crucify mankind upon a cross of gold.
I shall resign the presidency effective at noon tomorrow.
Government is not the solution to our problem.
Do not have sexual relations with that
constitute
woman.
Constitute an axis of evil.
You still want to see us fall backwards.
There is not a liberal America and a conservative America. There is the United States of America.
Good morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 13th of August, and it is All Things Political, which you always hear on Mondays at 9. We've had a huge political weekend. We will, of course, start the program with conversation about Mitt Romney's pick of Congressman Paul Ryan to be on the VP slot and what that means. There was a huge crowd in Waukesha last night. I understand some 13,000 people who were there to cheer on this selection and to cheer on this team. Will that be something that we'll see in states all over the country? Is there now a clearly defined world vision between Republicans and Democrats? We will this hour have a couple guests with us. Tomorrow also is a very important primary day in the state of Wisconsin, and we'll pay special attention to the U.S. Senate primary and ask if there are major differences among the candidates on the issues of the day. John Fund is joining us, the first part of the show, senior editor of the American Spectator. He has a new book that's coming out tomorrow, Who's Counting? How Fraudsters and Bureaucrats Put Your Vote at Risk. We'll be welcoming phone calls, and I hope to take quite a few this morning. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email address is talk@wpr.org, and we always have this Facebook page so you can leave comments. Particularly interested in your comments on the Ryan choice, and that is the Kathleen Dunn Show. So here we go. John Fund, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Kathleen.
It has been described again and again and again as a very bold choice to pick Congressman Paul Ryan. Would you agree, and what does that mean?
Well, Mitt Romney had a business career which involved a lot of risk-taking, a lot of hiring of young talent who he gave lots of sway to. His political career has been much more cautious, almost stilted in some respects. I think this is a return to Mitt Romney's business base background. And he's clearly picked a protege, a running mate, who is very talented, and he's not worried about him outshining the top of the ticket. And he's giving him a lot of lead to go out and make the case for pro-growth economic policies. And what will be said is the stagnant economic condition of our current economy.
Well, is there a major difference between those people that we thought he was going to nominate and Paul Ryan? Is there a big difference between, say, a Tim Pawlenty and a Paul Ryan?
Well, Tim Pawlenty was a good governor of Minnesota, but he didn't have the kind of sweeping, overarching vision Paul had, nor the kind of hands-on training on dealing with the federal budget. And what Paul has done in the last 14 years that he's been in Congress has basically created a blueprint for governmental reform. Many of its provisions, although not all, were included in the Simpson-Bowles compromise on the budget. And I think that this really does put in a contrast with the incumbent administration. Obama-Biden ignored and walked away from Simpson-Bowles. They really haven't tackled the serious deficit problem that we have, the long-term debt problem. And you can agree or disagree with the Ryan budget, but it's a serious plan, and it's detailed.
Is the team running on the Ryan budget or on the Romney budget, and are there substantial differences between the two?
Well, Romney is going to run on his version of the Ryan budget, but he has endorsed it. It is going to be part of the campaign, and regardless of whether or not everything that Mitt Romney wants to do is in the Ryan budget, I can assure you that those grandmothers who were thrown off the cliff in the wheelchair last year in those Democratic ads are going to be making a reappearance.
Mm-hmm. Paul Ryan has said at I think it was last year, the CPAC conference, he talked about, and he tends to think in large terms, he was talking about the American idea. He said we are engaged in the battle of the American idea. What is that? What is that? And is this really going to be a campaign that looks at very different visions of what the American idea is.
Well, the alternative to the American idea overseas is social democracy, especially as practiced in Europe. And it has provided a very good safety net, some would even say a hammock, for citizens in Europe. I mean, I grew up in Europe. I have many European relatives. I know the system very well. But I don't think it fits with the American traditions of entrepreneurship and optimism and risk-taking. And what you have in Europe for the last 25 years is unemployment that is stubbornly over 8% in almost every European country. You've had the collapse of the euro. You've had a demographic bubble burst. Now Europe is losing population. There are no new net private sector jobs created in Europe in the last 20 years. The only growth has been in government jobs. And European economic growth rates are stagnant or negative.
And you feel that we are embracing policies in this country that are similar to European policies? What are those?
Well, all you have to do is go across the border in Illinois, and what you have are excessive public employee pension programs. You have very high taxes. You have a regulatory structure that is far too restrictive. You have economic uncertainty. I think one of the reasons we've had such a poor record in creating jobs the last 4 years is the economic uncertainty. It's not just Obamacare. It's not just Obama's war on coal. It's not just the regulatory policies. It's the fact that, you know, we've managed to have a Congress and a president that haven't agreed on whether or not we're going to have the largest tax increase in American history starting on December 31st when all of those tax cuts expire. So I think it's a big mess, and if you don't believe that we're following European policies, at least we are in some states. Look at Illinois. Illinois is bleeding to death, and Illinois is not going to be able to pay its public pensions in about 4 years.
Let's look at the issues of Medicare and Medicaid. They now become, because of this election and Paul Ryan's emphasis on changing those programs, really front and center. These are programs that have been, particularly Medicare, relatively popular. Will these issues become front and center? And do the Republicans run a risk of taking on programs that most people have enjoyed?
Well, of course they take a risk. And obviously these are popular programs. On the other hand, they're going broke. And you can't provide government services if their system is bankrupt. So let's take Medicaid. You know, the cruel hoax of Obamacare is about 40% of the people who are going to get new health insurance under Obamacare are going to be dumped into Medicaid. Medicaid is a very, very flawed system. It provides substandard medical care in many cases. Almost half of doctors will not take new Medicaid patients because the reimbursement rate is so low. I'll be honest with you, I wouldn't take my dog to Medicaid. And Medicare is a fine program in many respects, but it's being savaged by Obamacare, at least the portions of the program called Medicaid Advantage, which allow people more choices inside Medicare. Obama is dismantling that, cutting Medicare Advantage back dramatically. So the system is going to change. The question is, how is it going to change? And what Paul Ryan proposes and what Mitt Romney has also agreed to is the system shouldn't change for people currently on Medicare. It shouldn't change for people within 10 or 12 years of going on Medicare, but it has to change for people, or at least options have to be offered to people before, you know, let's say the age of about 53. Otherwise, the system goes bankrupt. Now, Paul Ryan's latest plan says this: if you're under 53, we're going to offer you a range of options and to go into change your Medicare program. It may give you more flexibility. But if you want to insist on staying in traditional Medicare, we will allow you to do that. No one has to change. Now, admittedly, a lot of people are going to be suspicious of that, but they also need to be suspicious of Obamacare. Remember, President Obama said, if you like your current health insurance, you won't have to change it. Well, we're already discovering a lot of people are having to change their health insurance.
So these issues will remain front and center as the campaign goes on, do you think?
Oh, I mean, we're going to see Medicare scare ads so frequently in your state of Wisconsin, you know, you'll think they're an ongoing soap opera.
Speaking of Wisconsin, there was a huge rally for Romney Ryan in Waukesha yesterday, some 13,000 people, which I'm sure isn't very easy to organize at the drop of a hat. Nobody knew he was the guy. It was really so closely held a secret. Will we see crowds like that elsewhere? And what did that tell you about an enthusiasm for this choice? It would appear that a lot of people are very enthused about this choice.
Well, Paul Ryan is 42 years old. He has a wonderful family. He has got an incredible record of accomplishment. You know, he really did, you know, start out with very few of the traditional advantages in life. He came from a family that was fairly comfortable, but he basically had to pay his own way. I'm embarrassed to tell you, Kathleen, I'm old enough to have known Paul Ryan when he was an intern in Washington 20 years ago, and he once was my bartender at Tortilla Coast on Capitol Hill.
Was he a good bartender?
Well, I'm not a heavy drinker, but I recall that he made a mean apple martini.
Let's welcome phone calls. We have tons of them, as you can imagine. We're talking this hour about the selection, well, this part of the hour, the selection of Congressman Paul Ryan to be the vice president on the Republican ticket. Our number is 800-486-8655, and John Fund is our guest, senior editor of the American Spectator. His new book comes out tomorrow, Who's Counting? How Fraudsters and Bureaucrats Put Your Vote at Risk. Scott in Green Bay is our first caller. Hi, Scott.
Good morning. Yeah, I just think it's great for Wisconsin. I mean, this is an exciting time to be a Wisconsinite and to have somebody like Paul Ryan on the ticket. And what I think this does is this pick accomplishes two things. First of all, it really kind of defines the argument and the differences, because there are really the campaigns were kind of sputtering, but now there are really two clear differences. So we really actually get a campaign, which is exciting. And then more cynically, I think what it does is it really kind of validates what conservatives have been saying about the press for years, because it's going to really kind of expose this false narrative that we were given 4 years ago about Barack Obama being, you know, postpartisan, you know, the one, godlike, as Evan Thomas said, how he was different than any other politician. Because what you're going to see is, from Barack Obama, a very negative, traditional Democrat campaign. You're going to see Paul Ryan throwing grandma off a cliff. You're going to see it over and over again. So I think it really exposes what us conservatives have thought about the press for decades, you know, and it does expose that false narrative that Obama isn't what everybody told us he was 4 years ago.
Your response, John?
Well, I think that Paul Ryan has already been attacked as heartless and extremist, some kind of mad acolyte of Ayn Rand. I mean, the negative attacks have already begun. But anyone who knows Paul Ryan knows that he is a sober, sensible person. You may disagree with his philosophical premises, but he really does care about the future fiscal health of this country. And let's face it, Democrats, Republicans, independents can all agree we've all been asleep at the switch. Through the Bush years, the deficits went up dramatically. They have gone up even worse under Obama. And even the Obama administration admitted before Congress recently that it has no long-term plan to deal with the federal debt. Secretary of Treasury Tim Geithner said, frankly, "We don't have a long-term plan, but we don't like yours. We know that much." That's what he said to Paul Ryan. That's not an answer to simply oppose what someone is saying.
Thanks, Scott, for the call. Victory in Appleton. Hi.
Hi. How you doing?
All right. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you for asking. First and foremost, this is a continuation of the divide and conquer. I don't like what Obama has done. He should have went back to the original Constitution. We wouldn't be here. Our economy wouldn't have tanked. Now, conservative, stay as we are. These are a select group of people that will continue to prosper while our middle class continues to migrate overseas. You've got a $75,000 a year executive way down just because he took care of the people, the politics of our world, our corporation, which D.C. is a corporation, is divide and conquer. Pit us against each other, and those that are elite will continue to, it's just a further complication of Pavlov's way of handling things. I think we need to evacuate the current way we do politics, because as long as we're going to have two sides, we're going to have wars. We have that on too many levels of our society. If we plan to make a difference, there we go. Now, the other thing is, if the Republicans hadn't said they did not want Obama to succeed, then he would really be pressed to have done what he said. But all of the constant things and the overall way that some of the senators says, no way, Jose.
John.
Well, I'll be honest. I couldn't quite follow the entire thread of the caller's argument. But, we are in a world economy. We do have competitive pressures. We can either pull up our drawbridges and build moats around us and have a protectionist world, or we can somehow adapt our economy to the new realities. And I think we're doing a pretty good job. We have cutting-edge industries, including in Wisconsin, high-tech, software, medical devices. By the way, the medical device industry, which is a lot of companies in Minnesota and Wisconsin, is being dramatically hurt by new taxes under Obamacare. So I think the debate is going to be how in the world we adapt our old manufacturing economy to the new manufacturing and high-tech economy of the future, and how we compete with lower wage countries like China and India, which we can do, but we have to clean up our act in order to do so.
You know, and our caller made reference to this, that you're going to hear from the Democrats frequently comments about the 1%, that the tax cuts really favor people who are in the upper 1%, that the Ryan plan doesn't pay enough attention to those who are middle class and who are poor. Have the Republicans successfully countered that charge? And is this a charge that you think will play out with voters?
Well, all I will say, we now are 42 months into our so-called economic recovery, and we've had unemployment of over 8% every one of those months. So clearly, the economy is stuck in neutral. There is not one school of economic thought, I don't care whether it's Keynesianism or supply side or monetarism or rational expectations or Marxism or vegetarianism, that says you raise taxes in a weak economy and it makes things better. It simply won't.
More phone calls in a moment. Our guest, the first part of All Things Political here on the Ideas Network, is John Fund, senior editor of the American Spectator. Our number is 800-486-8655. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two of our program today, we'll be speaking with Terrence Kaufman. Terrence, a few years ago, wrote a fascinating book, A Walk Through the Wheat Fields, The Missing Journals of Vincent van Gogh. He saw his first Van Gogh, the real painting, when he was a young man, and he thought it put him on a search to find out everything he could about Van Gogh. And this is a fiction account of what it would be like for somebody to have encountered a whole series of Van Gogh journals that nobody knew existed before. So we're going to do an interesting thing. He also recently has started doing a performance of Van Gogh, so he's going to join us for part of the show as an artist, as he is, who really likes Van Gogh, and then he's going to be Van Gogh for us. How about that? Back to phone calls. 800-486-8655 is our number. Jim in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. When I worked in the Division of Corrections, the best predictor of future criminal behavior was looking at past criminal behavior. And the core issue in this campaign is whether we can trust these guys to any extent at all. And there was a joke in Time magazine this year. And it said, a liberal, a conservative, and a moderate walk into a bar, and the bartender says, "Hi, Mitt." And, what does this guy stand for, and can we trust him in any way? And look at the past record during the Bush administration. Cheney meeting with oil company executives to write energy policy, and Bush nixing new standards for arsenic in drinking water, and Condoleezza Rice talking about smoking guns and mushroom clouds in Iraq, and the Republicans in 2002 jamming Democratic phones in elections, and later on Halliburton getting a $7 billion five-year no-bid contract in Iraq. And then ultimately all of this, of course, culminating in the tremendous amount of job losses during the Bush years and the crash of the markets and the real estate crisis. And there's nothing in the past that can give us any indication that we can trust these people in the future.
John.
Well, there's a lot to unpack there. I will just say that certainly Mitt Romney's career has raised questions as to what his fundamental core principles are, but he certainly reached out for a vice presidential running mate that has nothing to do with the Bush administration, in fact opposed some key elements of the Bush spending practices, And as for trust and consistency in office, you know, a lot of liberals, you know, elected Barack Obama to close Guantanamo and clean up the Patriot Act, civil liberties abuses, and a whole bunch of other things, and those weren't done. A lot of people thought that Barack Obama was going to deliver a tax cut for the middle class. He really didn't. A lot of people thought that Barack Obama was going to help reduce the deficit, and he didn't do that. And a lot of people thought he was going to create jobs, and he didn't do that.
Thanks, Jim, very much for the call. Let's talk a little bit about the people who have inspired Congressman Paul Ryan. You talked about Jack Kemp. We hear Ayn Rand has also inspired him. Have those people inspired you as well? And how significant an inspiration have they been in Paul Ryan's philosophy and actions as a congressman?
Well, I think that if you look at Paul Ryan, he started out as a speechwriter for Jack Kemp and then for Bill Bennett, the former Secretary of Education.
Mm-hmm.
He then worked for Senator Sam Brownback of Kansas, who then went on to become a very successful governor. He clearly is inspired by Ronald Reagan. And if you look at all of those people, there is a common thread. There's a belief in traditional values. There's a belief in economic growth. There's a belief that America is an exceptional country with a special place in the world. So all of that is part, I think, of a theme that runs through Paul Ryan's career. As for those people who inspire me, I've been inspired most by my parents and most by the family around me. As for the thinkers who've inspired me, I doubt your listeners would be interested in that.
It's okay. I like the fact you said your parents. That's good. Does it is it problematic for Ryan that he has spent almost all of his career working in the public sector in government, or is it a nice balance that you have Mitt Romney primarily in the private sector and Paul Ryan primarily in the public sector?
Well, Barack Obama spent almost no time in the private sector either, and we never heard complaints about that in 2008. So for some people, it may be relevant. I think the bottom line is, for someone who's 42 years of age, Paul Ryan has had a variety of experiences. He started out, you know, he was a personal fitness trainer in Washington. He was a bartender at Tortilla Coast, as I mentioned. He was a marketing consultant for his family company for 2 years. So, you know, at 42, if you're elected to Congress at 28, you're not going to have a lot of relevant private sector experience. But the bottom line is, this is the vice presidency. It's not the presidency. If you want private sector experience, Mitt Romney certainly has that.
Dave in Menominee, you have time for one more call?
Sure, and I'm sorry we weren't able to discuss my book even for 30 seconds. Maybe you can have me back.
Oh, we want to have you back on your book, but we don't have your book yet, and I like to read the books before we have the guests on. So I know it comes out tomorrow, and we are going to talk about your book.
But
yeah, definitely. Dave in Menominee, hi.
Hi, good morning, thanks. I was prompted to grab the phone this morning when the guest brought up the Bull-Simpson plan and how Obama-Biden walked away from it, and we know that's not true. We know that Paul Ryan was the chairman, and two other House Republicans walked away from a balanced bipartisan solution. Paul Ryan also voted no when he was on that commission. So when the guests come on and say these things that are so slanted one way, I think, you know, we need to have somebody at least correct them into the misleading statements that are being brought up.
John.
Look, let's be clear. Go talk to Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon, a Democrat. Go talk to former Pennsylvania Governor Ed Rendell, a Democrat. Go talk to former Senator Evan Bayh of Indiana, a Democrat. All of them will tell you that Barack Obama did not implement the Simpson-Bowles Commission. Please give me the evidence that any of the Simpson-Bowles recommendations have been adopted by the Barack Obama administration. As for Paul Ryan, he was not chairman of the Simpson-Bowles Commission. He was a member of it, and he voted no because he did not feel that raising taxes in a recessionary economy was going to be a good idea. But please tell me, what specific elements of Simpson-Bowles has Obama adopted as his own? Their answer is none. Give me evidence.
And on that question, we'll have to have that conversation.
But the caller has none.
John, thank you very much for being with us. We will talk to you about your new book coming out tomorrow, Who's Counting? How Fraudsters and Bureaucrats Put Your Vote at Risk, and we will do that in the next couple weeks.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, John. John Fund, senior editor of the American Spectator. There's also, keep your calls here because you can also comment on all that we've been talking about the first half hour as we continue. We do want to pay some attention to the Republican primary tomorrow because it's a significant primary and perhaps has been overshadowed, understandably, by the selection of Paul Ryan, who is, of course, from Wisconsin. And, of course, it would be a big deal here in this state. So we're going to be looking at that Senate race and ask if there are any significant differences among the candidates. And we'll also look at the polls the day before the election to see who, if any, anybody has the advantage here. Cameron Joseph is joining us now, staff writer for The Hill. Our phone number remaining the same, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Cameron Joseph, thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thanks for having me.
So if you were running for the U.S. Senate as a Republican in tomorrow's primary, you would probably say, oh, no, why did all of these other things happen right now? We wanted to be the focal point of attention, and they kind of aren't, at least right now, because of what else happened.
Yeah, I mean, these poor guys, like, look at what's happened over the last summer. You know, here is a race that could determine control of the Senate, an incredibly competitive primary, four very qualified candidates. Who you know have serious campaigns, and we have the gubernatorial recall. We finally have a little bit of a break. They're starting to get some messaging out. Obviously, Eric Hovde has spent the most money on it, over $4 million of his own money, and then just a few days before the actual election is going to occur, the guy from their state gets picked to be the VP candidate, and it just sucks all the air out of it. I mean, I really don't think that anything any of these candidates are going to do over the next 24 hours is going to make a lick's worth of a difference, and it really is just changes the dynamic once again of this race. I mean, these guys have really been kind of at the mercy of the winds of fate at this point, and it's been very hard for any of them to really cut through with a message because of this.
Right. Do you think that's going to translate into a lower voter turnout tomorrow, or are there enough people who are enthused about these candidates and will turn out?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a relatively low vote turnout. All three of them have pretty good political organizations, but I think people are just very tired of voting from what I'm hearing from a lot of folks in Wisconsin. And, you know, it's a split field. I think, you know, Tommy Thompson's going to have a decent amount of support that he was always going to have. Hovde, I think, needs a fairly slightly higher vote turnout. I think, you know, the people that you get influences with a lot of ads, those are the types of folks that may not be quite as regular voters, even for primary voters. You know, it's really important to be able to get them out. And Newman could benefit from that. You know, he's very well known with the conservative base. He's been running in third in most polls. But, when you start looking at, the people very excited about voting in some of these polls, Hovde and Newman are doing a little bit better than Thompson. And Fitzgerald, who I think is probably going to clock in around, 10% or so, probably not going to win, but he could play spoiler in this race. And, it's very hard to predict what's going to happen. It's kind of what happened in Missouri last week, where really going into it, no one had a great sense of who was going to pull it off. Everyone's kind of bunched up. Tommy Thompson clearly is very well known in the state. But Hovde's been spending very heavily, and Newman's got the Club for Growth backing and some Tea Party support. And this is going to be a really close finish.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think anybody can really forecast what's going to happen here. And I also think that all three of these guys might have had their 24-hour game plan and, the final thing to do. And I think that got some holes shot in it in the last weekend.
Did you get the feeling that those who were already prominent Republican figures were giving the nod to any particular candidate? I did. I won't say who that candidate is, but I'm wondering if you're getting the same impression.
I've gotten a sense that it's split. I think the establishment Republicans want Thompson.
Mm-hmm.
I think even a lot of the office holders who are more conservative than Thompson, Governor Walker has talked about how much respect he has for him. Paul Ryan, even last weekend, was talking about how much, he loved him and kind of, the last weekend he was mainly talking about the reforms to the welfare state. But, it's my sense is the Republicans who are more pragmatic, who really want to win the seat, are behind Thompson. There's a fair amount of pretty hardline voters, especially in Waukesha County, who are pretty pro-Newman. where his political base is. And the Hovde voters are kind of the very conservative voters who don't like Newman because of his primary against Walker. And so it's kind of personal. But my sense is the Republican establishment all want Thompson. And while they're not saying on record, hey, he's their best chance to win because they're worried he's not going to win the primary, he would definitely start off the general election with a slight advantage. Newman and Hovde, I think, would probably start off at a slight deficit against Tammy Baldwin.
And what about that Thompson, should it be Thompson-Baldwin matchup? Polls have shown recently that Thompson fares pretty well. Does he still fare the best?
Yeah, he does. And I think that's going to stay true. You know, people know Tommy Thompson. A lot of folks, more independent voters, like Tommy Thompson. Older voters really like him in the state. And if it turns into a Baldwin-Hovde race or a Baldwin-Newman race, it becomes D versus R. And assuming President Obama wins the state, and I think that's probably likely at this point, even with Paul Ryan on the ticket, they're going to need to run a few points ahead of the of Romney. And especially Newman is very, very conservative, and it becomes a very liberal versus a very conservative candidate, and it's hard to get a ton of separation, whereas Tommy Thompson is going to pull some independents, might even pull a few Democrats, and will really be able to run a few points ahead of Romney, which is what Republicans need in the state at this point.
Do you see any major differences in viewpoint on the issues among the candidates, Cameron?
Well, not right now, but that doesn't mean there haven't been in the past. Tommy Thompson has really moved very far on healthcare issues from even where he was 2 to 3 years ago, and he'll deny it. But he was essentially had an issue with basically big government plans because he didn't feel like some of them were covering quite enough. In terms of requiring everybody to have health care insurance, he wasn't sure it was a good plan because he wasn't going to have, he wasn't positive it would get everyone covered. Now he's saying he opposed it from the beginning, and there's some Senate testimony what he made in front of a Senate committee that indicates that it really wasn't that issue. It was more that he had an issue with it not working well enough. He was for some bipartisan reforms. He eventually came out against Obamacare as it ended up passing the House and Senate, but he and Tom Daschle were working fairly closely together. And so I think that's a big difference from where it had been. And also when he was governor, he expanded, he worked fairly closely with the public sector unions. He was friends with Marty Beal, who's the head of the state AFL-CIO. And, they worked very closely together on some reforms that ended up expanding the pensions that Scott Walker was just battling. And I think that really is something that today would be unpalatable to a lot of Republicans. I don't know necessarily if he's going to vote any differently on some of the major issues facing the country right now, but he certainly has a history of being a more moderate candidate than the other two. Mm-hmm. And Hovde is kind of a blank slate. It's hard to tell where exactly he comes down on stuff. He has refused to take the Americans for Tax Reform pledge to not raise any taxes because he wants to close some what he considers corporate welfare loopholes. So I think he's going to be a little more of an independent actor, whereas Mark Newman is going to be just a very down the line hardline conservative. But Hovde's also very conservative. I think he's just one of those guys who tends to break with orthodoxy a little more, and it's a little more idiosyncratic in his viewpoints.
Let's take a couple phone calls for you. 800-486-8655 is our number. Robert in Waukesha, hi.
Hi. I agree with your guest 100%. I think that Tommy Thompson has moved now so far over to the right that there's basically no separation between the Republican candidates. I think that Tammy Baldwin, once the Republican candidate has been determined, I think that it will be a great debate. And I would be very interested in seeing if Tommy Thompson tries to move back to the center. I think that his feet will be held to the fire because of the Tea Party and other conservatives. But it would be a very interesting debate. And I'll hang up and listen to your guest response.
Thank you, Robert.
Well, I think you're right on that, and I think that Tommy Thompson is the nominee. I think he's going to have some of the same balancing act that Mitt Romney has had at the presidential level, trying to balance between keeping the conservative base happy, as clearly Romney just did with Paul Ryan as the pick, and figuring out a way to appeal to moderates. And I'm wondering, Romney is in a much more focused light and really has to flesh things out. More than someone like Tommy Thompson has, who can say, look at all the things I've done over the years. and point to some of the more conservative things he's done, but also point to some of the more moderate things he's done. And, you know, he has a record that he can point to say, look at all this record of accomplishment. You can't say that I haven't done anything. So I think that's going to help him in the general election. Tammy Baldwin, you know, is very liberal on some issues. She's for single payer. She's for essentially government run single payer health care. So I think that's going to be an interesting debate. Obviously, as a former Health and Human Services Secretary, he really has a very good grasp of health care. Whether that helps him in the primary or not is a different question. But it's going to be a very interesting general election if that's what happens. And I think Thompson probably starts off with a fairly strong edge, you know, four points, I guess, 4 or 5 points. And it'll be interesting to see if she can make that up. But I'm not convinced that Thompson's going to come out of this primary. I think it's going to be a very tough race. And really, any of the three, Newman, Thompson, or Hovde, could pull this off.
Who's pouring the most money in this race?
Hovde has spent the most by far. He's spent more than $4 million of his own money. The Club for Growth has also come in. They're over $1 million. I think it's close to $1.5 million helping Mark Newman right now. And Thompson, really surprisingly, considering, you know, his 30 years and 40 years in politics and all his connections, and, you know, he knows all the Republicans in D.C., he knows all the Republicans in Wisconsin, and his fundraising has actually been very weak, which is not a good sign.
Why? Why do you think that's the case?
You know, I've been trying to figure this out, how much of this is that he just doesn't like fundraising, which I think is part of it. He's much more of a retail politician. He likes going out and doing that. And you know, even if you have the ability to fundraise, it takes a long time commitment to sit and make call after call after call. And it's a lot of politicians' least favorite part of politics. And Tommy might just not want to do it. So I think part of that is that. And part of that is the conservative base is pretty resistant to him at this point.
It's going to be an interesting election all around because there are fairly clearly different positions on some major issues and differences in just philosophy of what this country should be.
Yeah, I think we're looking at a very, very clear contrast. You know, Thompson is not nearly as far right as the other two candidates. But you're definitely not going to be able to mix them up for positions. There's not much overlap here between Tammy Baldwin and any of these other candidates.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think in the final minute here of the Ryan choice?
You know, I think it's an interesting choice. I think what it really says is that Mitt Romney felt like he couldn't win without really looking for a game change. This is not the safe pick. This is clearly risky. You know, Paul Ryan, I don't think anyone has any doubt that he's a fairly controversial character. And I think people, once they get to know his plan more, I'm not necessarily convinced that it's going to hurt Republicans, but it's certainly a much bigger risk than somebody like Rob Portman or Tim Pawlenty.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for being with us, Cameron.
Thanks for having me.
Cameron Joseph, staff writer at The Hill. We continue our conversation with Emily Schultheis, who is national political reporter for Politico, and welcome more of your phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@WPR.org, and you can always go to our Facebook page and leave messages. We love to read them, and that's The Kathleen Dunn Show. Next hour, a visit with Wisconsin artist Terrence James Kaufman and Vincent Van Gogh will drop by. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Emily Schultheis is with us now, national political reporter for Politico, and we're talking about the major news, and that concerns, of course, the Paul Ryan as being the vice presidential pick of Mitt Romney. And he's from Wisconsin. It's a big deal nationally, but a big deal in this state, too. So we continue that conversation and welcome more of your phone calls. Emily, hello. Thank you very much for being with us.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah. Cameron Joseph, staff writer at The Hill, just said that the pick of Ryan was a controversial pick. Would you describe it as such? Is it controversial? Is he a controversial person?
It definitely is more of a high-risk, high-reward choice than some of the other people that ended up being on Governor Romney's shortlist, Tim Pawlenty, Rob Portman, both of whom were considered sort of more of the safe choices. So Ryan certainly is, you know, not as wild card as some other suggestions that people had, but he certainly does present a certain level of risk for the Romney campaign.
What is that risk?
Well, obviously, as we all know, Ryan has been the architect of a very controversial at times budget plan. which in some respects helps Romney because it is a very specific policy vision, and it's a very specific vision for what the campaign would do if elected to the White House. But on the other hand, because of the controversial nature of that budget, it definitely does present the challenge of Romney figuring out how closely tied he wants to be to that budget. He doesn't agree with every single aspect of it. And in some of the states where they're campaigning, in some swing states, it's not necessarily the most popular thing. So we're already starting to see the effect of Ryan on the ticket trickle down into Senate and House races in some cases. And it really does define that campaign as being about the Ryan budget.
Mm-hmm. Mitt Romney yesterday in Waukesha talked about how he wanted to get five things done. The ticket wanted five things done. He talked about energy resources in this country, putting work back into welfare. It talked about the issue of trade. There will be consequences when people cheat, cutting federal spending, and being a champion of small business. Is that a good platform? And which of those five do you think this team will be concentrating on?
I mean, as to whether or not it's a good platform, I can't really say too much either way. But I think that what they will be focusing on as a campaign is still going to be the economy. That's always been the focus of the Romney campaign. It's the issue on which they think that they can get the upper ground against President Obama. So regardless of Ryan being on the ticket, I'm sure that that's still where the Romney campaign's focus is going to be.
Mm-hmm. And was it, a lot of people have been saying that Ryan was the choice because the campaign needed a spark, that the Romney campaign was kind of faltering, that they needed somebody who wasn't kind of a middle of the road, somebody who was energizing the base. And certainly, if Wisconsin is any indication, it did energize the base yesterday. We'll see how this plays out. What do you think?
Well, in reporting that I had done sort of leading up to this moment, everyone has basically said, look, you know, the more of a bold choice a campaign makes in its vice presidential candidate, the more they think they need that bold choice to go forward. And so it's something that Romney has never really been the favorite of the Republican base. He, despite the fact that they've coalesced around him, in the general election, it doesn't necessarily mean that the base is really thrilled about him as a candidate. And so having Ryan on the ticket does certainly help to ease some of those concerns. He's somebody that is basically, the darling of fiscal conservatives. The Tea Party likes him. Social conservatives mm-hmm. have really praised the pick. So within the Republican Party, he's someone that virtually everyone has said is a good choice for Romney's running mate.
Let's imagine for a moment the Ryan Biden debate. I think that one will be interesting. What do you think?
Oh, I totally agree. And that's something that some people have started to speculate on in the wake of Romney's announcement. He's a very wonky guy. He's someone who knows his stuff when it comes to the economy, when
right.
it comes to entitlements. And putting him up against Joe Biden is going to be, it's going to be interesting.
It sure will be. Let's go to more phone calls. John in Eagle River. Hi.
Hi, how are you guys?
All right, how are you?
Good, good, good.
Hi.
Quick comment on actually your last segment, if I can. I called once to talk to the fellow who, the Republican, Tommy Thompson, who was our governor.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him, I said, you know, you're kind of passé and kind of a political has-been, and while you were in HEW or Health and Human Services Director, you didn't do anything about health care. And he was touting his plans for, you know, going against Obamacare. Anyway, that aside, he kind of exploded when I said that, which I guess is his right. But anyway, to shift on Paul Ryan, I'm an independent, and when I saw Paul Ryan selected, I thought Romney just pulled a McCain. I mean, he selected somebody without very much experience who would be 100 heartbeats away from being the president, who I would not want as my president. And I thought, geez, I mean, the guy, he's really won every Medicare recipients vote for Obama now because his $18,000 a year voucher, I'm on Medicare, it would buy me insurance for about 3 months. And I think that the fact that he got the House and the Senate to approve that, to vote on it, is just ridiculous. And so his selection certainly has won for Obama every person voting on Medicare and everybody above the age of 50.
And yet, from my understanding, John, it's not supposed to affect people who are on Medicare right now. So do you think among younger people it might be more popular?
Well, it won't affect us because we'll stay on what we have.
Right.
But, you know, we think of people coming up, and we have a lot of friends that are, you know, just turning 50, 55, and we think, Jesus, if they had to deal with an $18,000 a year voucher, they'd be in the same place we're in. You know, they couldn't do it. They'd have insurance for about 3 months.
Emily.
Right. That certainly is an issue that that has come up in the last 48 hours since the announcement. One of the states in particular where this is becoming a big issue is Florida, and that's where Romney is today. It certainly is a concern that the Ryan pick could backfire on the issue of Medicare. That's something that we're going to need to be watching going forward.
Thank you, John, so much for your call. Rich in Sullivan, hi.
Hi. I think we need to watch a number of states that have been adding jobs, and I would mention Michigan and Ohio. Texas, of course, has added jobs. California, contrary to what your guest in the last half hour said, Illinois has also increased jobs, not greatly, but more so than the state of Wisconsin. And I really do think that this is going to be a campaign full of surprises as to with whom the American people identify. The black guy who had to, for want of a better word, claw his way up to the top spot in the United States, or the guy who seems to have lived off inherited wealth and casually dismisses things that other people would consider to be high achievements, like numbers of Cadillacs or putting elevators in one's residences for one's automobiles. And I really do think the people of Ohio have told us when they had their referendum on the collective bargaining issue that you Republicans may want it one way, but the people may want something very, very different. So it's going to be a fun campaign. It's going to be very contested. And I really do predict that the Republicans may be surprised by how unpopular their vice presidential pick ultimately turns out to be.
Hmm, interesting. Emily.
Right. That's certainly something that we will be watching going forward. I think that it is going to be, you know, again, we'll have to see as far as views of the Ryan budget plan going forward, because Ryan is himself, he's well known among people who pay a lot of attention to politics frequently, but that doesn't mean he's well known among the entire American public,
right.
Nor necessarily is his plan. And so the next couple of weeks, we really are going to see this defining on both sides. And from there, I think it'll be much clearer, you know, what's going to happen this fall once we see people starting to make up their minds about him and his plan either way.
Yeah, we, of course, live in Wisconsin. Everybody knows who Paul Ryan
right.
is. But I saw something in some of the coverage over the weekend that only 16% of the American people knew of him, which, you know, where
right.
is everybody? Pay some attention because he's a major figure in Washington. But they have some work to do in introducing him to a large segment of the American people. What states today, Romney is in Florida, Ryan is in Iowa, what states do the Republicans and Democrats, for that matter, need to pay special attention to?
Well, I mean, Florida is certainly one of them. Florida was always going to be a battleground state. And in the wake of this announcement, both campaigns are certainly going to be putting a lot of focus there, particularly on the Medicare issue. The other state that people questioned whether it could be a battleground state before, and it certainly is now, is your home state of Wisconsin. I think that obviously having Ryan on the ticket puts the state in play, but it's a state that's been on the presidential level pretty reliably Democratic for the last couple of decades. And so I think it'll be interesting to see how much effort and how much manpower the Obama campaign puts into Wisconsin going forward.
Thank you very much for being with us, Emily.
Thanks for having
Thank
me.
Thank you. And here it all goes, huh? It will be a fascinating presidential election. Emily Schulteis, our guest, this part of the program, national political reporter for Politico, Cameron Joseph, staff writer at The Hill, and John Fun, senior editor of The American Spectator, our guest as we look at all that happened over the last couple days. Tomorrow, of course, is the primary, and there are a lot of important local races taking place as well. Tomorrow night at 8 o'clock, we will have campaign coverage, primary coverage here on the Ideas Network. We do a crackerjack job of election coverage, I think. And so please join hosts Sean Johnson and Frederica Freiberg for tomorrow's coverage starting at 8 o'clock. Thanks to Brett Jaspers and Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour, and thanks everybody for all of your calls. We have news coming up from National Public Radio, and stay with us for Vincent van Gogh.